Hello, my name is Massimo Vignelli. You're listening to Type Radio. Now we are talking.
Type Radio FM.
Now we're talking.
The cube is timeless. The sphere is timeless. The pyramid is timeless. Look at the pyramids. Would you change them? There's no way you can change a pyramid. You know, you can make a triangular pyramid or a square pyramid. You make a round, it's a cone. You know, but it's hardly. You can hardly improve on that. Well, you can make the different angle, but still, you know, like that. But one is better, the pyramid in Egypt. They're much better than any other one. I mean, that is a perfect example of obsolescence, timelessness, you know. Now, of course, you cannot design pyramids all the time. And it also is true that timelessness, it's another form of trendiness. You know, I mean, if you go down deep, you know. And there is nothing completely wrong into that. You know, there are theory things which represents a period very well, you know. Art Deco is a lovely thing, you know, for instance, you know, it's very much of a period. And got obsolete in a sense, you know, and certain aspects. I mean, I think everything we do eventually somehow obsoletes, you know, but there are things that obsolete much faster than others, and those are the ones I'm referring to as trends, and those are the ones I'm very deeply against.
But they're also necessary, or not?
They're economically necessary for certain business, and they're extremely wrong for certain others. I think it is wrong to design a thing that obsoletes next year if it has to last, you know, for 20 years, at least a chair, you know, has to last a certain amount of time, and if it's designed in such a way that obsoletes very quickly, obsolescence is a crime, you know, and but sometimes it's justified. In the fashion business, obsolescence is the spinal cord, you know, of the business. You know, it's the essence of the business. I mean, it's all built around that. Fine. Do I like it? No, I don't like it. I think it's possible to design clothing. You know, look at the jeans. I mean, the jeans are jeans, basically. Well, they get wider and narrower, you know, things like that. Of course, the fashion people manage to, to make a bad thing out of that, to pollute also a handsome thing like the jeans, so to speak. But look at the t-shirts, you know, there's a way you can decorate that, but still it's a t-shirt. You know, I have a t-shirt, you have a t-shirt, you know, you keep going, you have a t-shirt, no, that's a dress, almost. So anyhow, you know, there are things which are more universal, and then I think they're great solutions, you know. But fashion can only live because of obsolescence is involved into it. Of course, then there are many ways of doing it, and there are fabulous fashion designers which can do that in a very brilliant way. So brilliant that it becomes successful way, and so on and so forth. But it's all built into his own world of short life. You know, now you when you approach that world, you know it. You pay thousands of dollars for that, you know, and it's okay. If you are a fashion victim, it's a disease that you control because you can afford it. You know, clothing is a different thing. Clothing tends to be good for a much longer time, and it tends to repair. It's based on logic. When it's the fashion, it's not based on logic. It's based on emotions. You know. So you see how fabulous design is. There's so much into it, you know.
But for example, the American Airlines logo that you mentioned yesterday, that you're surprised that it's still that they
I'm
haven't
not
changed.
Surprised because it was designed 40 years ago, and in 40 years I've seen so many corporate identities for airlines coming and going. You know, even if the airline is still there, United Airlines has changed so many times. You know, American Airlines hasn't changed. Now, why? The planes are not painted. Painting a plane, it increases the weight and it makes it more, you know, you have to put more fuel. You know, it's more expensive to run because it's painted.
It also costs more by painting.
Yeah. When American Airlines planes are unpainted, and that's why they look so great and unique too. The logo is one typeface, which is just as good. It's been around for 50 years. It's going to be around for another 50 years, for sure. And the colors are the colors of the American flag. Can be, you know, the only thing that there is one word, American Airlines, instead of being two words. That was enough. You don't have to do anything funny with the type. You know, I don't believe in type manipulation. I think it's a waste of time, and I think it's an uncivilized idea. It's a form of subculture from my point of view. And I don't like subcultures. There is so much in the real culture, there's no time to really dwell in subcultures. But postmodernist, just because, you see, this brings me to a postmodernist. You know, I'm a very, very, very much of a modernist, you know, and I'm very much an anti-postmodernist. Postmodernist was really the revenge of the people that never made it with the modernist philosophy. And they had their 15 minutes of celebrity. And thank God when it came out, it was bad, but you could see that it was not going to last. However, you know, since it's been there for more than 10 years, it had time to really poison one generation of, you know, and one or two generation of students, because they had teachers, postmodern teachers, and so on and so forth, you know. But why did I get to it? You know, just because what I was saying, I don't remember.
The American Airlines logo.
Well, I don't remember. American Airlines, we were talking about that. That has been done a long time ago and hasn't changed and is still alive. It's still fine. I don't think there is any need to change it. But also because it was approached that way, without manipulations, we were talking about subculture. That's why.
Yeah.
The glorification of subculture is a typical manifestation of postmodernism. Now, there are forms of subculture which are fine. For instance, if you take vernacular architecture, that is the architecture of the territory, that is fine. And architecture, this is a phenomenon that is very important and has been completely denied by the modernists, unfortunately, because that is what created that stupid architecture which has been around for so long, sameness all around, you know, da-da-da-da. Architecture is rooted in the territory. And the architecture of Lisbona is very different from the architecture of Barcelona or Florence or Rome, whatever it is, you know, any city, or Venice. And so the architecture of territory is rooted on the culture of the territory. Graphic design doesn't have that much of a root. You can say that there are, you know, manifestation in graphic designs which are national. Swiss design is definitely recognizable from Swedish design, from English design, American design, and so on and so forth, you know. And the Spanish, Italian, you know, there are some kinds. But it's not as strongly related. Now, also because communication is international, it's fast, everything moves fast, there are products, change, you know, coming. There's Coca-Cola going everywhere, you know, and products that really tend to be universal in commerce. I mean, to have universal, physically universal, not culturally universal, but they do affect the culture. They do affect things. So there is a sort of a levelization of sameness of, you know, in the overall graphic culture around the world. Good or bad, what it is more bad than good, anyhow. But the fact is that, contrary to architecture, really, there is no valid indigenous form of valid graphic design. There are forms of subcultures. And there was I don't know if you've seen a lecture yesterday about Brazilian subcultural graphics, I mean, things like that. Well, there are plenty. And the postmodernist historians really they believe very strongly on these things. Well, Helen Lupton yesterday, the lecture she did is she is a very much of a postmodernist, and she was pointing out about this, you know, local or you know forms of graphic design and so on. And but you know, one thing which is unifying everything around is the computer, the tools. You know, when the you know people were writing with the feathers, you know, that gave a particular kind of a character to the type. You know, when the type started to be in size, you know, with the movable type, that gave a character to the type. Now that it's done with a computer, of course, the computer is giving particular character to that. And that is the civilization in which we are now, you know, obviously controlled very much by the medium or the media as well, you know. The medium, it's all there, medium and the media. So that's why I don't think that there is any possibility of triumph, cultural triumph, in vernacular graphic design. Vernacular graphic design is a form of subculture, and because of that, it stays there, you know, as a subculture. It's not subculture is fine, terrific. It's not made by subhuman. It's just made by humans that have a different cultural exposure. You know, I'm not such a Nazi to say they are subhumans. You know, but definitely there is a difference between subculture and culture. I'm interested in culture. I'm not interested in subculture. I'm interested in making contribution to our society, and it can only be made through culture, not through subculture.
And you don't think that subculture also becomes...
No. Subculture stays subculture, and culture stays culture. There's no interaction between the two, and there is no positive interaction. Now, culture can look into subculture phenomena and evaluate them in many different ways, including and mainly for what they are, you know. But there's nothing to learn from it, from my point of view. It is done by people that have no roots in the culture most of the time. It's done by people without culture.
But can it be so that, like, there are elements from the subculture that are sort of adapted by people who are working in the
cultural world.
And they adapt stuff and make it molded in a way that it sort of becomes part of the culture?
Unfortunately, that happens. I'll give you a very good example, graffiti. You take graffiti on the subways, for instance, graffiti on the streets, graffiti on the bridges, graffiti on the highways, you know, the graffiti worldwide, you know, is a typical manifestation of subculture. Now, if you are a freak of subculture, you might even make a book about the beauty of the graffiti, but and the fact is that they pollute our environment visually in just as much as a bad odor.
www.typeradio.org